Hi there and welcome to the Natural Resources Wales podcast mini-series on flood risk management. My name's Kerrion Gingell and I work here at Natural Resources Wales. In this series you'll hear from the different teams who work together to reduce the risk of flooding to communities in Wales. This will give you a really good overview of what flood risk is, what we're doing to manage it in Wales and what impact the climate emergency is having on flood risk in Wales, both now and in the future. Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Natural Resources Wales Flood Risk Management mini-series. Today I'm joined by Ben Hext, who works in our National Asset Management team. Welcome Ben and thanks so much for joining us. I think to kick things off, and before we venture fully into the world of asset management, it'd be really nice to hear about your background. So can you tell us a little bit about perhaps your education and your career path and what's led to you being in this area of work and in Natural Resources Wales?
Thanks, Kerrion. It does seem quite a long time ago since my days in education, although I can still say I'm learning lots now. After high school, where I loved geography, tolerated physics and mathematics, but I love kayaking, cycling and the great outdoors, I went on to study geophysics at university. And this is the study of the Earth's physical processes, natural hazards and how we can measure them, such as seismology and volcanology, or prospecting for oil and minerals. After graduating from university and a wonderful year of travelling the world and odd jobs to pay my way, I landed a job as a project geophysicist in North East Wales.
Oh wow, a year of travel sounds really nice. Where did you go? What was your favourite place that you visited in that year?
Oh, so we ended up travelling partly through Asia, Singapore, Malaysia, and then over to Australia and New Zealand.
Lovely.
And spent a lot of time in New Zealand and did a ski season and worked our way around there as well. So absolutely wonderful country. A year just isn't long enough.
No, I've always fancied New Zealand myself, actually. Add it to the bucket list.
Indeed.
But that sounds really exciting. So you were telling us about your first job before I interrupted you with talk of travel. But your first job was a project geophysicist. What's that?
Yeah, I started working in that job where I undertook seismic, magnetic, hydrographic and even unexploded bomb surveys around the UK and Ireland. Ooh. So we used highly sensitive specialist geophysics equipment. And it felt a little bit like Time Team, for those who remember Time Team, but a lot less glamorous, and there was definitely no TV cameras.
Wow, unexploded bombs, though. I mean, what a first job.
It was a really interesting job. I got to see loads of new places you wouldn't normally have access to and have the excitement of trying to detect bombs left over from the wartime blitz. Yeah. Even today, World War II bombs are still discovered and hit the news, especially when the controlled explosion is a big one and requires a huge exclusion zone. So you might remember Exeter in 2021, where houses were damaged from the huge fallout.
Wow.
I then followed my interest in rivers and whitewater kayaking, and a job came up in the Environment Agency, and this was to manage the river topographic surveys for a large part of northwest England. And this was a fantastic role for me and gave me access to see many of the rivers and culverts, huge culverts that run beneath parts of Greater Manchester, and all the flood defences to help manage those really densely populated areas.
Yeah. And
later on, this opened up a door for working in Wales with a team that manages the hydraulic flood models. And these simulate flooding, their impacts, and we publish the outputs of those simulations on our public-facing maps.
Yeah.
Shortly before the pandemic, I moved roles to look at adaptation of tidal flood defences in the face of sea level rise. We're facing as a society, which is a really exciting but challenging area. And I think you've already heard a little bit about that in a previous episode.
That's right, yeah, we did. We heard from Rick Park back in episode 2, I think it was, and that was all about coastal adaptation and climate change, which covered a lot about sort of sea level rise and that kind of thing. But yeah, as you say, really fascinating, but certainly poses a big challenge.
It really does. Then more recently, I worked with a team that hold and manage most of the public-facing data held on flood risk management assets as well as our flood risk maps. And this entails me working with flood colleagues across Wales as well as across the United Kingdom.
So you've tried your hand at a fair few different aspects of flood risk management in your career to date. But what about your current work area? What are flood risk management assets?
So flood risk management assets are any landscape feature. These are built or sometimes natural that help manage an elevated level of water on a floodplain and helps to manage and protect homes or businesses from flooding. So these could be obvious things like large embankments or engineered walls next to the river, the sea or an estuary, but they can also be more subtle features like ponds, lakes or areas that may remain dry 99.9% of the time, or they may have a recreational purpose too. So these elements, these are called flood storage reservoirs. So sometimes flood risk management assets are completely out of sight, such as a culvert, so a river can flow underground. And these days, there may be more natural features further upstream to help contain some excess water or rainfall runoff closer to the headwaters.
Yeah, we've heard a little bit about that as well, actually, in previous episodes. So it's really good to see how all these things kind of interconnect.
Yeah, so and then heading towards the coast, for the coastline, this might just be as simple as adding a lot more sand onto a beach. So this forms part of a more of a natural flood asset. And this helps manage the impact of waves and splash over. So we have this whole range and combination of individual assets to work together as a system to better protect our communities from floodwater.
So we've heard about natural flood management and how that's becoming more widely used to complement perhaps more hard engineered solutions like these sort of big concrete flood defences and that sort of thing. But it sounds like perhaps there's even more parts to the puzzle than that. So now that we know what flood risk management assets are, maybe you can tell us how we use them.
So when we think of flood risk management assets, it's easy to think it's a relatively modern concept. But in actual fact, humanity has built on or farmed floodplains as well as reclaimed marshland for millennia. Yeah. It's normally flat and fertile ground, which makes it easy for us to build on or to farm.
Yeah.
So going back in history, the earliest recorded flood risk assets were built in China some 2,900 years ago. And in the UK during Roman times, mainly to protect forts and small communities. And these may have been simple turf or gravel mounds to keep out spring tide or seasonal floods, just affording some protection to people's homes or to the farmers and their land. But over time, these developed into larger, improved banks to help keep out flood water and ditches to help drain down the landward side. So over centuries, these have all further evolved and engineered into bigger embankments or more complex drainage systems that we see today.
Yeah. So they started off maybe a bit more natural, like you've mentioned, some of the sort of more natural assets, but perhaps over time, and I suppose as people have gained more skills and more knowledge, they perhaps become a bit more kind of engineered then rather than natural.
Yeah. As we see today, our communities have expanded onto many floodplains and coastal strips, and there's just less space for excess water.
Yeah.
We're also reliant on some really old flood risk assets that perhaps may not be up to the job as we see the real effects of the changing climate. So we do have a programme of maintenance, repair, and where necessary and justifiable, new build or upgrade of assets. But we can't protect everyone, everywhere, all the time. And we just can't keep building higher defences either.
No, it's probably not practical, is it?
No, and if we start to build higher, the impacts could be much worse if they do ever fail. There's a lot more water behind them to create a hazard. So, and plus, they're just less practical when living by a river or the sea, as they begin to block people's views.
Yeah, of course, it's another thing to consider, isn't it? You know, that's someone's bought a lovely house with a view of the sea, and then you build a great big wall. They're perhaps not going to be too happy about it, even though it's got benefits, it's got downsides too, doesn't it? So
exactly. So instead we try and build things so they're more resilient or part of an overall system that manages flooding a little differently. So yeah. That includes things like retaining more water upstream of a community using assets such as flood storage reservoirs, or setting back embankments, or developing some natural flood risk management solutions such as leaky dams that I'm sure you've heard about in some earlier episodes.
Yeah, that's right. We had Vicky Grease starting talking about natural flood management, so we've heard a little bit about that. So she did tell us about nature-based assets, and we are starting to see and to use those more and more. You've mentioned flood storage reservoirs there, but what are they? Can you explain for us what does it mean?
Sure, yeah. So a flood storage reservoir are purpose-built areas to contain water, either through damming a valley or building an embankment around an area where you want to contain the water to help manage flood risk.
Okay.
So these are normally on or next to a river, so that they can, when there's an excess of water, it'll either fill up or spill into there. So it's a bit like having a huge bathtub to hand to put your water in when you've got too much.
Sometimes, good analogy.
Yeah, so sometimes they have a dual purpose, and when they're dry, they may be a recreational area or a golf course. But in times of flood, they get completely inundated to ease water levels elsewhere.
And I guess the sort of idea behind that is that you've got less sort of people on a golf course. I mean, obviously not when they're playing golf, but if you know it's going to flood, you wouldn't have people playing golf there, I'm guessing. But it's better to sort of let that area flood than perhaps somewhere lower downstream where you've got more people and properties, maybe.
Exactly. It's much better to allow that area to flood rather than actually entering people's homes and causing devastation.
Absolutely.
There. So,
yeah.
So we're in Natural Resources Wales. We're also the Reservoir Enforcement Authority for Wales. And this means that we have a duty to ensure all reservoirs, whatever their purpose in Wales, are built and operated within the law, and that they're safe for really good reason.
Yeah, they need to be, obviously.
So this doesn't just mean flood storage reservoirs, but also all the hydropower schemes that you see around Wales, drinking water reservoirs, and quite a few of these go back to the Victorian era, so are really quite old.
Yeah, it's strange. You mentioned right at the start that we think of assets perhaps as being a new thing, but they're really not, are they? They've been around a long while.
Exactly, they've been around a long, long time. So, and we also have some quite strict controls to help us out as well on whether you can build any new homes or offices, schools, hospitals, or factories in the floodplain. So, aside from the obvious benefit of not putting more people in harm's way, we already have quite a lot of flood risk to deal with in Wales, with the existing homes and properties that were built on the floodplains a long time ago.
Yeah, I guess before people perhaps understood the risk and the impact, and I guess even the cost that we know better today.
Exactly. So, but you know, we still need to remember that flooding is a natural occurrence. Yeah. And there's plenty of evidence that's been happening throughout geological time. And it has helped form the beautiful landscape of Wales we see today.
Yeah.
But we've got over 245,000 properties at flood risk in Wales. And that's about 1 in 8 properties.
It's a lot, isn't it?
It is a lot if you think about it. And that will sadly only increase in time as we see higher river levels, more intense rainfall, and increased sea levels as a result of a changing climate.
Yeah.
So, and then flooding can be really devastating, have some real long-term impacts, not only physically, but on people's mental well-being.
Yeah.
And of course, in the most severe cases, it can pose a real danger to life. Flooding is really expensive for the economy and insurance companies too. And a typical home, if flooded, can cause about £40,000 worth of damage. So
that's a lot when
you multiply that up through a community. That's a lot of money and damage to a range of properties.
I mean, it's a lot for one home, isn't it? But as you say, multiplied across a whole community, it's going to quickly tot up, and it's, as you say, very expensive for the economy and for the insurance companies.
Exactly. So, you know, thinking back, the worst case I've ever seen was following the west of Wales summer floods in June 2012, where muddy, filthy water flooded a home up to its ground floor ceiling level The occupants were lucky to escape on that occasion.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. And it also strikes me that it was a summer flood. You know, we tend to think that flooding happens mainly in the winter because, you know, we get more rain in the winter. But clearly it can happen any time of the year.
It can. And you know, predominantly we expect flooding to happen in the winter. But when it does happen in the summer, it can be really intense, severe flooding in quite a localised area where the rest of Wales may be basking in sunshine at the same time.
Yeah.
So we do need to manage flood risk where we can, and we provide a warning service in case of flooding, and we try and prevent any potentially new inappropriate development on the floodplain as part and parcel of this whole picture of managing flood risk and the flood risk assets.
And that's it. As you say, it's not just one thing. It's all kind of working together, isn't it? So given that flooding is, as you said, a natural occurrence, I'd have thought that climate change is probably already having an impact on it. But is climate change impacting your work already, or do you see it continuing to impact or starting to impact in future? And if so, how are you going to adapt the work to tackle it?
See, I've really been working in flood risk management for 20 years, and I've seen a noticeable change in increasing unpredictability to the weather patterns affecting us.
Yeah.
So there seems to be more frequent big floods affecting Wales than we're seeing more prolonged periods of dry, hot weather as well.
Yeah, I mean, even as recently as sort of summer 2022, we had a very dry summer and droughts. So it's sort of both ends of the spectrum, isn't it?
It is. We're getting the extremes of the spectrum now. And, you know, so, and to help us in many ways, big storms are now named, which helps people stand up, take notice and do something about them a little bit more than previously, especially if they're already aware that they're living in an area of flood risk.
Yeah, and a lot of our teams as well in Natural Resources Wales do help in raising that awareness so that people do know perhaps that you know they might be at risk of flooding. So it's not just about having the sort of defences in place, it's about raising the awareness of the possibility of flooding as well, isn't it?
It is, and you know, we're finding that the flood science is having to evolve and cope with all this change as well. And, you know, finding that our assets that were built to a 1 in 100 annual chance of flooding in the 90s and the noughties may not perform to that now. And with climate change, that standard of protection, as we call it, will likely continue to reduce into the future. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has found that the 1 in 100 annual chance extreme sea level events are projected to occur about once a year by 2100.
Wow, I mean, that's a huge, huge statement, isn't it?
Exactly. So we're seeing quite a rare event now, almost happening every year by 2100.
Wow.
And then with this, so once you have higher sea levels, this causes waves to be able to carry more energy to the Wales coastline and defences and then cause further impacts of communities that are already affected by coastal flooding and erosion.
Yeah, so it's just going to make it worse.
Exactly. It's going to be a really big problem, you know. And unfortunately, it's just not possible to protect everyone everywhere. And we're having to look at other ways of managing flood risk and resilience and adaption rather than just building more or bigger and higher defences.
Yeah.
So helping to make communities more resilient to flooding by considering adaptation, for example, will help them to recover quickly and with less cost, but might also help biodiversity and the nature emergency.
Yeah, because the two are linked, aren't they? You know, the climate emergency and the nature emergency. We perhaps hear more about the climate emergency, but the two are linked, and helping biodiversity will help, as you say, with that nature emergency too.
Exactly. It's all part of a bigger picture. So,
yeah,
you know, and we'll need to set back some flood defence assets where we can and make more space for water. And this will help lower overall water levels or reduce wave energy near the coast during a flood.
Yeah.
But it will also enhance biodiversity and habitats for communities. And these can become great amenities for the community as well, which are great for, you know, physical and mental well-being.
Yeah, so it's good for the environment and it's good for people. It's a win-win.
Exactly. You know, we've got some real big challenges ahead, and, you know, in some cases we may even need to move parts of communities as it may not be simply not cost effective or safe to continue to protect them. And this is really challenging and will take decades of in the planning. So those listening in today could be part of that plan and the ultimate solutions.
Which is a really important thing because, you know, that's not something that you could do lightly either. So it will take, as you say, decades to plan. It will mean lots of help and support for those communities, but also in people working together to sort of try and come up with other solutions.
Exactly. And they are challenging, difficult solutions.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, in short, in order to help us meet the challenge of climate change and the effects of flood risk management in Wales, we need to adapt, think innovatively, and make Wales more resilient to the inevitable challenge of more rain and rising seas.
Yeah, it's an awful lot to consider, but, you know, it's reassuring as well to hear that these things are kind of on the radar and they're being explored as a way of tackling those effects of climate change here in Wales. Before I let you go, I'd love to know what your favourite part of the job is. What do you get out of your work, either professionally or personally?
I really enjoy the day-to-day variety, not just of the work itself, but the people I work with in Natural Resources Wales.
Yeah.
I also find the role of our incident management rota really rewarding. So here I'm responsible for issuing the flood warnings that people are aware of to communities in North Wales.
Okay.
So that they can prepare for an impending flood.
Wow. So that's quite an important part of the job too.
Yeah, it's sort of a very sort of reactive part of the job. That, you know, really quite rewarding.
And yeah.
I also like the people I work with and the longer term positive impact of our work on society. Yeah. It'd be really challenging at times, but also really rewarding.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, and then I feel that, and I hope that I'm contributing to making a better place for my children, my children's children, so that they can live in a better, healthier and more climate resilient society too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, what a noble thing to do. It's a nice legacy to leave, isn't it, if we can make things better for next generations. Thank you, Ben. Thanks for giving up your time to talk to me today. It's been really interesting to hear all about the work that you do and the way that it's helping to create a more resilient Wales kind of in the longer term, I suppose. So, yeah, thank you so much. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you have any comments or questions, you can contact us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or by the email address that you can find in the show notes. You'll also find links to our flood risk management pages where you can view some of the things we've talked about here today. Thanks for listening.